We're back on the Monday edition of Community Watch and Comment. I'm your host, Gloria Minot. Taken straight from the headlines, attorney Willie E. Gary earned his reputation as the giant killer by taking down some of America's most well-known corporate giants on behalf of his clients. He has won some of the largest jury awards and settlements in this country's history, including more than 150 cases valued in excess of $1 million each. Gary's amazing success has earned him national recognition as a leading trial attorney. Adding to his staggering awards is the most recent. The R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company must pay $23.6 billion, with a B, to the estate of a man who died of lung cancer in what may be the largest verdict for a single plaintiff in Florida state history. A state jury awarded the punitive damages Friday to the estate of Michael Johnson Sr., who died in 1996 from lung cancer after years of smoking cigarettes. Attorney Willie Gary joins me in studio. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, and it's good to be with you.
It's good to see you. Now, would you take the case of your client forward? Tell us, what are the facts?
Well, in the tobacco case?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, one of the main concerns, Gloria, that we had in this case, and first of all, my father died from smoking, and one of the concerns that we had was that the tobacco industry not only lied to its customers, but then after the customers believed them, they got upset with the customers for believing their own lies that they had told the customers. And that is that the cigarettes were safe for you. As a matter of fact, they were healthy for you. They had pregnant women believing that they'd have smaller babies, healthier babies if they smoked. So they just lied, and they didn't tell the truth. And, you know, so that was one of the things that we were concerned about. And I think about my father, I think about those who started smoking when they were 12, 13 years of age because the tobacco industry focused on developing young smokers so they would have a longer stream of income. And they boasted and they bragged about the money that they were making on the backs of the smokers who were believing the lies that they were telling them about how dangerous smoking was. And so, you know, I said, well, this is not right. We are losing in this country 490,000 people every year to tobacco-related smoking diseases from tobacco. And not only that, but we are on the mark to having 1 billion people die this century around the world due to tobacco-related diseases. Somebody has to understand that this is a bad product that needs to be a recall. It could be made safer. People have the option. I don't say that, you know, you're an adult and you can't make your own decisions. But what I am saying and what I said to tobacco was that leave our children alone. Leave our children alone. They didn't do that, so now they're paying the price.
You know, the tobacco company says that it's appealing immediately.
That's always the case. They always appeal. You know, I haven't had a major case that we have won yet that you didn't get an appeal. That's kind of automatic. That's going to happen. And that's a part of what we do. That's part of the litigation process. That doesn't bother me. You know, they always appeal because they never agree to anything. So you have to fight, and you have to be willing to fight, and you have to have the fight in you to continue to fight because they have the money, they have the power, they have the resources, they even have the influence. But, you know, as I said to the jury, I said, you know, members of the jury, you have a lot of power too. And you see wrong, you can make it right. When you see suffering, you can stop it. And I don't care how much power they have. You're the bosses. You're running this show. It's a justice movement. And you are in charge. And you can bring major corporations to their knees when you catch them wrong. And that's what happened in this case.
You have taken on some corporate giants from Disney. The list is long. Would you discuss with us some of the other cases you've
had?
Well,
you know, just like the tobacco industry, I've spent all my years of practice in law fighting for the least of these, fighting for the less fortunate, being a voice for the voiceless, fighting for those who just never could or never would be able to fight for themselves. So, you know, it's nothing new to me to take on this giant. You know, I like the role of David, you know, because somewhere somebody said it's not the size of the dog that's in the fight, but it's the size of the fight that's in the dog.
You've been a very tenacious foe in the courtroom. You've been cited at times for bringing your opponents to their knees in the courtroom. What gives you that adrenaline rush when you face an opponent across the table?
Well, you know, like I say to kids around the country, you know, if you're willing to work hard, you're willing to pay the price, you could be whatever you want to be. And it's the same thing to lawyers. You know, the best prepared lawyer is going to win. You have to be willing to burn the midnight oil. And I've always said, there you only have 24 hours in a day. I work 24 hours a day. Very few lawyers are going to do that. So more than not, you know, you put yourself in a position to win because of your work ethic. And then, you know, it's my faith. I just feel that, you know, I know a lawyer that has never lost a case. And that's my faith. That's who I am. That's why I'm where I am. And so, you know, and sometimes I have to call on it because, you know, the situation sometimes is too much for Willie Gary. You know, but I do have a power. I have a lawyer that I can call on. He's undefeated. So I'll
you
say
know,
no more.
You know, I just listened to you talk, and the things I've been reading about you have been quite impressive. Where were you born?
Well, I was born in a little place in Georgia, South Georgia, Eastman, Georgia. As a matter of fact, it was a little shack in the middle of a cotton field. And of course, my parents moved to Florida when I was just a baby, and my dad worked in the sugarcane fields of South Florida. We used to be migrant workers traveling from South Florida to the Carolinas to harvest the crops and so I grew up that way. That was 11 of us, and including my parents, 13 of us. And we lived in a little shack about the size of a two-car garage, but we were happy. You know, they were good days, and we, because, you know, my father and my mother, who didn't have an education, but they wanted me to have an education. And my daddy went to the second grade. My mom finished the eighth grade, but I never forget it. My baby sister was born on a Friday, and my mother was back in the fields working on a Monday. So they taught us the value of hard work. And my dad, he had a second grade education, but let me tell you something. He was a businessman. He could take any crop. He could take no crop and make a crop. When all the other crops failed, my dad found a way to make a good crop. You know what I mean? And I thank him every day, because I think if there's anything that I bring to the table in the courtroom, is I look at the attitude that my dad had when he was making those crops. He just refused to fail. He refused to make a bad crop. You know.
Let's have a discussion about your education. You applied to colleges. You were turned down unceremoniously at times. You were finally accepted at one college. Talk to us about that
experience.
And
let me say this to all of those out there that can hear my voice. I want you to get closer to the radio so you can really hear me. If you didn't go to Shaw University, you made the biggest mistake of your life. But guess what? We all make mistakes, and we have to, you know, be willing to forgive each other. I just wanted to get that in. Not that I'm favoring my school, understand. But, you know, Shaw gave me my start. Shaw gave me a chance when I was on my last leg. I'd been told by all the schools in South Florida that I wasn't even college material. That I wasn't good enough. But thank God for Shaw that they gave me a chance to get an education, and I'll never forget that. And that's why, you know, I made my pledge of $10 million to Shaw University, and you know, I can tell you this. With God's speed and with the cases that we're handling and cases that we've done already, you know, Shaw is going to be out of debt. If Willie Garrick has anything to do with it, I can guarantee you that. Shaw, there's a lot more to come. You know, just keep praying and keep believing and keep trusting, and we're going to be all right. And for all those young boys and girls out there that's looking for a university that really cares and that understands the plight of the Willie Garrick types in this world, you need to sign up for Shaw like yesterday, because that's the place to be. That's the place to be.
You know, you said in growing up and reading the history books, you never saw anything in them about Denmark Vesey. You rue the fact that young people today, young black people, students, really don't know enough about Rosa Parks.
Denmark Vesey, William Trotter, all of those famous brothers and sisters, Fannie Lou Hamer, Rosa Parks, and all of them, they laid it on the line. They really, in a real sense, gave their lives so that, you know, we'd have the chance to be who we are. And, you know, and sometimes I blame those of us who are in a position to know who Rosa Parks was for not making sure that our young people know. I was speaking to a group of kids, and my surprise that none of them knew who Rosa Parks was. And I said, maybe they don't know because we haven't taught them. Mm-hmm. We have an obligation to step up to the plate. They need to know about the march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama. That was Highway 80. They need to know that, because, you know, that the thing that stands out when I learned about the march was an 80-year-old lady that was marching up Highway 80 from Selma to Montgomery, and her feet had blisters, and there was blood dripping down, and she was marching. And someone said, "Ma'am, well, you've done enough. Why don't you just sit down and rest a while?" And she said, "No, I must keep marching. I have to keep going because I'm marching not for myself, but for those boys and girls that are coming behind me that they need to have the right to vote. They need to have that." So, young people, you need to understand that there was a price. Both black and white people paid a price for us to have the opportunity that we have today, just to vote. That march was about just having the right to vote. Can you imagine that? You know, and so, young people, you know your history and understand that you have an obligation. You have to pick up some of these crosses. You can do it. You can do it, but you got to stay focused. Don't make it. Don't get to your ivory tower office. And I'll always say this, that, you know, don't get the title behind you and all of a sudden think that you got it on your own. Because doubtless to say, our old silver-headed grandmothers had more sense on accident than a lot of us have on purpose. You didn't get to where you are on your own. A lot of people paid the price. We owe it to them. We owe it to them to pass that on to our young people. And young people, you have an obligation. You have an obligation. You owe it to them to be somebody. You don't have the right. You don't even have the right to not be all that you can be.
Religion is important to you. You have two jets, the Wings of Justice 1 and 2. Talk to us about the role of religion in your life.
It's real important. You know, I grew up in the church. That's, you know, It's one thing we had to do. You know, we worked 6 days a week, but on Sunday, you know, Mom and Dad made sure that we were in church, you know, and I just feel that that's a must. I mean, my children grew up in the church, and I just think there's so much there that can carry you to wherever you need to be or wherever you want to be in life. But you know, I just feel that presence. You got to have it. It's there. You know, one of my sons told me, and it was so true. He said, you know, you need the Lord in your life. And you know, I said, well, you know, and some people question that, but don't question that, you know, because you got to understand that no matter what you're going through, he's never enough until he's all you got. And you got to get there in that situation, and you'll see that, you know, there's a lot of strength, there's a lot of power in his presence. And I just take that with me when I go in the courtroom. I was trying a case in Mississippi. At that point, it was the largest verdict rendered in the country, because we just, thank God, we just topped that verdict with, how much was it, 20?
23.6.
Yeah,
okay. Billion, would it be?
Keep me abreast of what's happening here. But anyway, down in Mississippi, I'll never forget it. We were trying this big case, and I got to the point where I had done all my research. I had, finished my investigation, and I just couldn't seem to get the points across that I was trying to get across. But I did what I always do. When I do all I can do, and I'm gone the last mile, I can't do anymore. I never forget it. That was in the courthouse. That was a library. It was kind of dusty, and books were all over the place. But I had to get away, you know, in that old shabby library. And I kneeled down and I told God about the issues. And I told him, I said, well, look, I can't do it. I need you. Because we walked away with a $500 million verdict in that case. I give him the praise. I really do. I just think that man can do some things, but God can do all things.
Two final questions. Where your office is located is a hotel. Would you talk to our listeners about your relationship to that hotel?
You don't miss a beat. The Pelican Hotel. And that's where we have our offices now. But the Pelican Hotel was a place where I had one of my first jobs, washing dishes and scrubbing floors. It's just amazing how. And that's why you have to be careful about how you treat people, too. Because what goes around comes around. Be careful. You know, the stranger that you see may be an angel in disguise. You never know. And, you know, you never know what people are going to be in life. And I never forget it. When I was a dishwasher at the same building, I was in about the 11th grade. And I scrubbed the floors. Couldn't even go in the front door to go to work. I had to go to the back door. But be careful how you treat people, because you never know. There were two men there. One, both were white, and one was a nice fellow. He was really, his name was Bill. I'll never forget it. Treated me like I was somebody, you know, and encouraged me to be somebody. And then there was John, who, you know, who just called me the N-word, talked to me like I was nobody. And I was just a young lad trying to help put food on the table. At 11 of us. And so, but I went off to college, came back to Stuart, Florida, and opened up my law practice. Well, the Pelican Hotel was still there. Be careful, because what goes around comes around.
Finally, would you take the time to tell us collectively how much you've earned in your litigation over the years?
Oh, man, I wouldn't know. And on that issue with the hotel, I came back and I bought the hotel. I want people to know that.
Yes.
But I don't know. God has blessed us. We've won. I mean, I've won. We sued Mickey Mouse. and Disney, $240 million. We sued Anheuser-Busch. We represented the famous ball player, Roger Maris, $240 million. The Lowen Group, we sued them in Mississippi, $500 million. And, of course, we sued R.J. Reynolds Tobacco, and, of course, we haven't been paid on that yet, but that's $23.6 billion. And, you know, it goes on and on. $100 million here, $50 million there. In these cases where God has blessed us to be successful, so it's we've had a lot of success, and I thank God every day for it.
Willie Gary, the pleasure was all mine. Thank you for joining me in studio.
Thank you for having me.
Back in a moment, please stay with us.